Hey y'all, you're listening to the
Nobody Cares
podcast hosted by Omar Usman and Adam Tofiki. Yeah!
Assalamu alaikum everybody. Welcome to the Nobody Cares podcast.
Nobody cares.
Adam Tofik and myself, Omar Usman. This is a new podcast we're launching on the Qalam Institute feed where we will be talking about random topics.
All random.
And if you like it, there's no Facebook page or anything like that, so you can tell a friend about it, but it'll be on the Qalam Institute feed.
And just popping up randomly whenever.
Yeah, there's no schedule. There's no. It's whenever we get a chance, inshallah, we'll sit down and, I think our next episode is going to be retired board members, retired Masjid board members. We got a couple other interesting ones in store, but this one will be about khutbas.
Khutbas, all about khutbas.
And particularly from the perspective of what it's like to be a khatib in the prep process when you're not an imam or a sheikh or a scholar.
But more importantly, a working professional khatib.
Working professional
that,
khatib.
That has its own challenges associated with it.
It's a dynamic that people don't understand.
Really don't understand.
So, with that, let's kick it off.
Okay. I think the first thing we want to talk about was the prep process for a khatib, especially, you're not a sheikh, we're not shuyukh, we're not people who go to an institute or study or whatever. What does that prep process look like?
So we should clarify what that means. What that means is that we don't have the luxury of years and years of study and a library built up in our head such that we can just get up on the minbar and take a topic, even as, let's say, cliche as repentance or patience or something like that, and wing it.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone can wing it. That's a different story. Even if you have the knowledge, you can't wing
it. But the references are readily available in someone else's head.
There's less legwork for them to do.
Yeah.
Whereas for us, there's a lot more from scratch, doing research and, finding ayat and hadith that might be rapid recall for others. So the prep process, number one, is a little bit longer. And then the other thing is it's finding things that are credible that you can talk about. And I always find that to be a challenge.
What do you mean? Give an example about that, a credible.
The khutbah in general is a reminder, but still there's an expectation from the audience that you'll speak about it authoritatively. Okay. So, there's a number of things that we're not going to get into. And, that's general for a khutbah as well, right? Like, you're not going to get into fiqh or aqidah or heavier issues like that.
Yeah.
But I think even when it comes to, let's say, giving perspective on, let's just take the idea of forgiveness or, daily spirituality, there's an expectation that we're speaking from some place of authority and experience.
Yeah. Yeah. One issue that I have with the prep process is just finding resources. Before even going to that, I think the most difficult thing I have with the khutbah is actually choosing the topic.
Yeah.
Because I feel like once you have your topic like set, everything can just you have something to research and you're focusing on something. But a lot of the problem I find myself into is I'm giving a khutbah that Friday and I literally have no idea what to talk about because nothing's really just come to my head. I could talk about a number of things, but just zoning in on one thing is one of the most difficult things I experience when preparing for khutbah.
And it's hard because you to be able to speak about it, that topic has to resonate with you at that moment in time.
Yeah, because I have notes. I have notes from over like 3-4 months of, this would be a great topic. But then actually choosing one and for forgiveness. I mean, if I'm not feeling it, but it's if I'm not like passionate about it that week to talk about or even researching it, then it's probably not going to make the cut.
And usually that passion comes from you have to discover some specific angle that you want to speak to.
Yeah.
And I do the same thing as part of the prep process is I have a notebook where I record ideas. So if I hear something cool in a podcast or I hear something in a YouTube lecture or I come across something in a book, it doesn't have to be Islamic resources only, right? It could be other places as well. But I come across some type of hook that makes sense, I'll record that as an idea. And I have stuff in there. A few months ago, I took something that I'd put in that notebook in 2013 and turned it into a khutbah. because it had, you know, it was just one of those situations where nothing was clicking, nothing was resonating. So I was like, all right, let me just go through everything in here. And something that had clicked with me at one point, you know, 4 years ago, clicked with me again. And I was like, okay, I can turn that into something now.
The problem I face is I'll record something 3 months ago and I'll look at it like 3 months later and I'm like, what was I really saying?
Yeah, it doesn't make any
sense. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
And that's why actually when it comes to that prep process, it's quantity over quality.
Yeah.
Anything that I'm like, oh, that's, even if it's just a cool point, it might not end up being a 20-minute speech, but it might end up being a closing point in a khutbah about something.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll try to do it that way. I mean, the key is, though, is having that core, like, one-sentence message that you want the audience to take away.
Yeah.
And it's usually something that you need at that moment in time, too, for it to resonate.
Yeah. One other thing that I feel myself like doing is and this kind of goes with the prep process is, you know, if, and I'll go to another point is when you're just not feeling it that week, you know, what do you do in that situation where you're just not feeling it and you just don't want to give khutbah?
I actually think that's the majority of the time. You know,
yeah.
The funny thing is like, you know, sometimes you'll get canceled on, right? Like, so sometimes you'll have a khutbah schedule and they'll be like, oh, we need to do fundraising this week. And they'll be like super apologetic. Like, you know, we're so sorry. We don't want to cancel on you and this and that. And I'm kind of like,
I love it.
I'm like, thank you. I could get a break because it's stressful.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's one thing that people don't get. Like, so even the night before the morning of, it starts the night before, right? Like, the prep process starts way earlier in the week. So if I need to write something new, I'll probably start writing it the week before, or at least by Monday night. And so then by Thursday, the idea is that by Thursday, the rough draft is done and it's got some time to, like, marinate,
Yeah. You
know, just for it to settle in, make sure it makes sense. But then Friday morning, especially if you're working that day, that's when things get hectic.
Yeah.
So you have to plan, like, obviously your lunch break is planned at work appropriately, but, you know, Friday morning, you have to get up early. You have to get dressed properly. You have to do all those things. You have to time your meals.
Yeah.
You know, It sounds so stupid, but, I delay my breakfast. I have a smaller breakfast. I drink like a super minimal amount of water, everything. And then right after Jumu'ah, I pig out.
Yeah, mine is actually, I take it a step further. I don't eat anything on Friday before Jumu'ah. I did it one time where I think a couple of times I had lunch, like a big lunch before giving khutbah.
Yeah.
It was the worst idea ever.
My worst idea was I started trying to do that whole gallon of water a day thing. And that was an uncomfortable khutbah.
So part of the giving khutbah when you don't feel like it's not only, I mean, I guess an emotional thing because you know sometimes you're just not feeling it. But I think from another thing, from a working professional side, if you just had a crazy week,
yeah,
I mean crazy week at work. Fridays, there's one time on a Friday where everything at my job and the entire data center went down, and I was giving khutbah at a pretty big location. It was one of those khutbahs that it was a half hour Jumu'ah khutbah that I had to give, and literally. We're trying to put out fires at work, and the mental capacity you have even to concentrate on giving khutbah afterwards is not there.
This happened to me this Friday as well. Like I walked out of a crisis that I'm supposed to be like responding to immediately no matter what. And so as I'm giving the khutbah in the back of my head, I'm like, I hope nothing happened.
Yeah.
I hope that, you know, no one was trying to contact. Even though they know, like, my manager knows I take 2 hours off for Jumu'ah.
Yeah.
Like, I've, you know, worked all that out ahead of time. But crisis situation is crisis situation sometimes at work. Like,
but from the audience perspective, I think there's a sense where, from the audience, like, the khatib has everything going right when they would
khutbah. Oh, heck no.
They've had time to prepare. They had a morning off. Like, they, you know, everything is calm. And then they're expected to give this amazing khutbah.
No, it's, you're running to khutbah after having done, like, a dozen other things.
Yeah.
It's funny, you know, at Khatib Workshop 1 year, we asked ANJ, like, you know, there's some Fridays we just don't feel like giving it. Our iman is low, our spirituality is low, all those things. And he was like, his answer was, put on your big boy pants. Like, you just got to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, everyone feels down and they have to process that feeling and rebound. And he said, if you're in the position of giving khutbah, you just got to learn to process that very quickly.
Yeah, and one thing about the prayer process and this whole not feeling like it, and there's been some times where my reading or my studying throughout the week has been subpar versus other weeks, and it's like what y'all say in Khutbah workshop. It's, you know, you can't give what you don't have, you know, within you. So it's you know, there are a lot of times where I'm rehashing an old khutbah that I've given at another location, and it's like, okay, I'll just give this for the next 15-20 minutes and it'll be sufficient. But
yeah,
my heart's not in it because, I mean, for whatever reason.
I think it's like you feel that, and sometimes it comes across to the audience as well, but it's, that's part of the challenge. And, you know, the more you prepare, the more you mitigate it, but it doesn't go away. But one thing that's funny, so one thing that I wanted to talk about with you was you said that you can't give what you don't have. And this brings up a really interesting discussion because I know that my opinions on this probably go against what the majority of people think on this particular topic, but that's the idea of awareness khutbahs, right? Or let's say like a social justice khutbah or something of that sort. So this is the situation where, you know, the invitation goes out saying, oh, you know, this Friday we need everyone to talk about domestic violence, or this Friday we need everyone to talk about Palestine, or this Friday we need everyone to talk about this particular issue.
Which is usually sent the night before, by the way.
It's usually sent the night before, but also this is where that nuance of not being the imam or not being a community leader in that formal sense plays a role, because if I'm the resident scholar of a masjid and there's a major issue going on, whether it's you know, a domestic social type of issue or you know, like an international incident or some kind of crisis, or it is like, you know, the domestic violence awareness or, you know, mental health awareness or something of that sort, that's part of their job duty in a sense, right? Like, they have to have an awareness of those topics. They have to know how to speak intelligently to those topics.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to these types of requests and someone asks me, like, hey, can you give a khutbah on domestic violence? I know this rubs people the wrong way, but my answer is no. And the reason that I say no is because, not because I'm like, you know, pro-domestic violence, contrarian guy, yeah, for the, you know, whatever, but it's because I know I can't speak intelligently to it. It's not something that I've worked on the ground. I'm not familiar. You know, there's people who do work in those arenas. I'm not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't know how to address that to a community. Like, I know someone can give you talking points, but then that's the whole thing of, like, if you don't feel what you're saying, it comes across terrible.
Yeah. And my thing too is I'm kind of the same thing where, you know, something will happen. No one has really made a request to me to do, you know, talk about X, Y, or Z on like a social justice issue or domestic violence or anything. But it's the conversation is there in the city, and so I'm kind of with you. I can give like a one or two sentence like blurb at the very end about it,
yeah.
But I can't. I can't address it for 20, 25, 30 minutes.
And, you know, and the other challenge is, and I've had khutbahs that were around major events, right? So
you have a cool story with this.
I do have a cool story with this. All right, let's go to the cool story, because the other parts I'll probably just end up rambling. So,
because it is a crisis situation, and you had a cool.
So, I'll tell the full story because we don't really, nobody cares how long this podcast is. And we don't even know who's listening, so whatever. So I remember right after Ramadan, Eid time.
Last year.
Was it last year?
Yeah, last year.
So your masjid, that you're the owner, board member, president, treasurer, Swiss Army knife.
Soon to be former board member.
Soon to be retired board member. Y'all had an Eid party at a trampoline park. And I remember taking my family there. And I saw Sheikh Yasser Bridras, and he asked me, he goes, hey, what are you giving khutbah next Friday? And I was like, no. He goes, all right, you got khutbah here. And I'm like, you know, you guys got, you and Omar Suleiman, I'm like, both of y'all are going to be out of town. He's like, well, I don't know, but, you know, and I'm like, Sheikh, if you guys are here, you don't need me to give khutbah. And he's like, no, they've been listening to us all month, and we need a break. and we're probably going to be gone out of town. I was like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, cool. Okay. So that was settled. I was, you know, formally booked for khutbah. And that Thursday night, the Thursday night before this particular Jummah that I was scheduled for, I don't know if it was the Friday after Eid or the week after. It was somewhere.
It was a Friday after Eid because I was actually out of town that weekend.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a Friday after.
That's why you didn't get scheduled.
Yep. No.
That's why you didn't schedule yourself.
No. Trust me. Scheduling me for khutbah, there's a long list you have to eliminate before you get to me. So.
But so the Thursday night, that's when the incident happened in downtown Dallas where there was an active shooter at the rally. It was Black Lives Matter rally. Yep. And there was an active shooter, and Omar Suleiman was there. Sheikh Omar Suleiman was there. And he was actually, like, he actually ran from the gunfire to see safety.
Yeah, he has a crazy story, but yeah.
Which we'll try to link to it, his khutbah that he ended up giving. Because I think everyone should listen to that.
Yep.
But so what happened was, so he's there. He's, you know, he ran out. And it's Thursday night, and I'm sitting here, and as crass as this is, like, okay, it's a terrible situation, but I'm sitting here thinking, they screwed up my khutbah, because how can I possibly talk about anything else other than this, right? So I'm sitting here.
It's not only a national issue, but it's
local.
The city of Dallas.
It's local, I mean. And at this point, like, if you don't talk about it, you're completely, and you know, the funny thing is that my dad went to a Jummah where the khatib didn't talk about it. And even my dad was like, is this guy, does he live in a cave?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and this is like a working professional, you know, studious, whatever person, but he just ignored it. Anyhow, so Thursday night, I'm just sitting here thinking like, what am I going to do? So I'm just like texting everyone I know, trying to get advice. First thing in the morning, I call Sheikh Yasser Perjas, and I'm like, Sheikh Yasser, you got any advice for khutbah? Or you want to take it over? And he's like, no, you know, it's yours. And just, you know, give people a message of hope and positivity.
Great.
And I was like, okay. I don't know what to do with that. But I was like, all right. So Sheikh Omar was supposed to be out of town. He was supposed to be in Austin. But he was now in downtown Dallas because there was a huge...
There was a visual service.
And this is where he was, like, saying next to George Bush and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right. So I'm, you know... making lemonade out of lemons kind of thing. I'm just sitting here trying to think, like, okay, you know, what, you know, is there like a story from the seer that I can talk about? What can I do? What message can I give? And at this point, I'm not worried about being generic as much as I am just being relevant to the situation and being just honest about, hey, this was a tragedy, all that stuff. Okay, so I'm, you know, so what happens is, I'm driving to Jummah, right? It's a 30-minute drive for me. So as soon as I leave the house, Sheikh Yasser calls me. And Sheikh Yasser says, we're saving the Imam parking spot for you, so make sure you take it. And I'm like, okay. And he goes, and I'll be attending as well, inshallah. And I was like, I was like, Sheikh Yasser, are you there right now? And he goes, yeah. And I was like, I'll talk to you when I get there. I was like, okay. So I hang up. And 2 minutes later, the president of the masjid calls me, and he's like, hey, Brother Omar, he goes, I'm really, really sorry. Like, he starts out saying, I'm really, really sorry, and I'm, like, fist bumping. I'm like, yes,
he did a
cancel on me. And he's like, you know, we scheduled you a long time ago, and we never canceled on a khatib last minute. And I'm like, yes. I'm, like, getting happier and happier. And he's like, but Sheikh Omar Suleiman was at the protest last night, and he... you know, he wants to give the khutbah since he was there. And I was like, absolutely. I'm like, it's his. I'm like, you don't even got to ask. And he goes, well, the issue is that he's not sure if he's going to make it back in time. He was supposed to be in Austin. He's, you know, going to try to leave from downtown Dallas. It's, you know, traffic is variable, all those things. He's not sure if he's going to make it back in time. And I was like, okay, look, I'm like, I'm your backup. If he's there, it's his, obviously. Like, I mean, it's his masjid. He's the imam. It's his khutbah. If you need me, I'll be there. And he's like, okay. All right, so that's settled. So get to the masjid, go into Sheikh Yasser's office.
Did you drive slower to the masjid?
No, I had left like pretty early.
Yeah.
Because y'all have a parking situation.
Yeah, we do.
So I got there pretty early. So I go to Sheikh Yasser's office, and I was sitting there talking to him, and Sheikh Yasser says something like, he goes, you know, I've been watching the news since last night, and I've been thinking, what can I say to the community? And I'm just looking at him. I'm like, Sheikh, if you feel like that, how do you think I feel right now? And he goes, you know, I thought about taking this khutbah from you and giving it. And I was like, there's still time. I was like, trust me, there's no resistance on my part. It's all yours. And then he said something that I truly think is a testament to his, like, mashallah, may Allah protect him, his, you know, wisdom, leadership, foresight. And I don't mean this in any way as, like, somehow complimenting myself or anything like that. It's, you know, people like him that push people. But he said that because of the issue that it is, he said it's more appropriate that someone who's born and raised here that doesn't have the same bias he speaks about it. And he said that's why, you know, something like this, he goes, it's better that, like, Umar Suleiman addresses it than himself. And then he said, and even if not, he said that he would still rather me go up there than himself. And as much as I might disagree with that, you know, that says something, because this was, you know, from like a point scoring perspective, this is like a primetime khutbah, right? Yeah. Like, it's at a big spot, it's a public spot, it's a high visibility situation. Like, anyone would, you know, trying to build their platform, so to speak, would want that.
Yeah.
Would want that khutbah. And he had a level of awareness that, like, mashallah, I was blown away. So I was like, okay. So, you know, I sat there, I went through my notes with him, like, what I was going to speak about. And then it was, I think it was like 1:45 start time.
Mm-hmm.
1:45, Sheikh Umar Suleiman's not there. So we walk out of the office. I see that the president just is like frantically walking around the lobby. He looks at me. He's like, you ready? And I was like, we got some time. And I think right then Sheikh Umar Suleiman texted that he was 2 minutes away according to the GPS.
Oh, clutch.
So I was like, okay. I was like, let's give him 5. If he's not here by 1:50, we'll start so people don't get restless. But yeah, let's give him till 1:50. But yeah, he pulled in right within that 2 or 3 minutes, and
that's incredible.
And you know, the best part for me was that I got to sit and attend that one.
Yeah.
We'll link to the video, but I think a lot of people that have heard that all remember that khutbah because, you know, like as much as we're saying that you got to be overly prepared to give a solid khutbah, this one was off the cuff.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's a particular situation.
And the thing about Sheikh Umar is that if you're not aware about him, he lives this on a daily basis for the past. I mean,
there's a reason he's, you know, he gets that publicity for these things is he's doing that work on the ground.
Yeah.
You know.
And the person to speak about that issue at that time on the cuff.
Yeah.
Would have been him.
Yeah.
And I always look at that story and just the foresight of Sheikh Yasser just saying that and this is for khatibs in general. I mean,
yeah.
If you can't give it or if it's not the situation for you to give it, then
right,
why take it?
And that's why and to be honest, this is why I feel very uncomfortable talking about international issues, like when you know something is happening like at Al-Aqsa or. I remember I gave khutbah the Friday after the Arab Spring. That was one of the hardest khutbahs I ever gave because I try to keep myself aware, but a level of awareness is a completely different ballpark from speaking intelligently to it in public.
Yeah, and there's also a balance in as far as a khutbah goes, because in one sense, I mean, yeah, you want to give awareness to what's going on, but you also want to.
The purpose of the khutbah is not social justice.
Yes.
The purpose of the khutbah is to raise people's iman until the next week.
Yeah.
And I know that some people hate hearing that because it's like, well, you're just going to keep talking about forgiveness and patience and this and that. It's like, well, you know, I hate to be that guy, but on the day of judgment, that's what you're going to need.
Yeah.
You know, like, we have to be that simplistic sometimes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you ignore what's going on. I think you can always make the offer certain situations and, you know, make a mention of it, but the khutbah doesn't need to be a political analysis when I'm not a political scientist.
Yeah. I remember once when, and this is a couple of years ago, I think, when the Chapel Hill shooting happened with the three young Muslims from North Carolina. That was something that I think with that khutbah, I addressed at the very end, but I focus on the legacy that they had done. So it was still a positive message that came out of that tragedy. But I mean, there's some people that they expect a political or a social issue to be talked about just for the sake of talking about it.
Yeah.
Every single Jummah, when the scope of the khutbah is more broader than that.
Right. And there's some situations, like I had khutbah the Friday after the election. I don't know why. I'm always stuck with the drama after, like, these major situations. But I had Friday the khutbah after the election. And I was struggling. And I think I even tweeted that morning because I was just so frustrated. I'm like, you know, people who are themselves in need of guidance are being looked to for guidance. Because this is one of those moments in time where, like, there's literally, this is what's consuming everybody's life right now.
Yeah.
And you have to speak about it. And the thing is, I don't know how to speak. And I remember that particular Friday, my intro was, you know, we're all reeling from the election results. And I literally said, people are looking at the khutbah for guidance when the khatib himself needs guidance in this situation.
Wow.
You know, I was like, I have to open with that. Like, I know people are coming here for, you know, how do we react? How do we deal with this? What's the Islamic reaction? You know, how do we prepare ourselves for whatever might come? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like, here's maybe a couple of things that we can all keep in mind. But what I found afterward, based on the feedback, was people were appreciative of it. They're like, you know, the funny thing is, I think we put pressure, like, we have to give people, like, we have to showcase them, like, what to think or how to react. And in this case, I mentioned, like, I really don't know. And a lot of people came up to me afterward, and they said that that actually resonated with them more.
Really?
Because they're like, it's not possible for anyone to know, you know, what's coming. And they appreciated that, you know, quote unquote, I hate elevating the status of the khatib, but it, you know, it is what it is. But they were like, we appreciate that the khatib is feeling the same way that we are.
Yeah.
You know, there's a relatability aspect to it.
Yeah, I remember the inauguration. I kept my head down on that Friday because I actually went to Sheikh Abdul Nasser Khutbah in Arlington.
Okay.
I intentionally did that because I knew he was going to address it in a proper way. And I got a couple of requests to give khutbahs here and there, but I just declined everything. And I was like, this is not for me the time. For me, it's not the time for me to be speaking. I just want to hear someone else who's more qualified than me address it than me give it, you know, about this issue. And from my perspective, it's, and I don't know if you feel the same way. It's like if something happens, like a terrorist act or whatever, if something happens, then the khutbah, you're always given the same khutbah over and over again.
Yeah.
And it becomes like, man, I just gave this like last month.
I remember when the cartoon thing happened in Garland, right? Mm. Like the Pamela Geller thing. I had khutbah that Friday as well. And here's the funny thing. I had given a khutbah after the Danish cartoon thing.
Oh, my God.
And I recycled it. Because it's kind of like, okay, well, yeah, nothing's changing here. But one thing that you mentioned that I wanted to make sure that we highlight was you mentioned that when there's, you know, these kind of situations happen. I'm going to pause for the airplane. Actually, nobody cares.
Yeah, nobody cares.
All right, we'll leave it in. We'll keep going. But that you try to study how other, you know, the people who are qualified address those topics. I think that's really important, that if someone is a khatib that needs to be part of your prep process, is you're studying how other people handle those situations.
Yeah.
And that's been something for me, because especially when Sheikh Abdul Nasser was like my local imam, and I used to hear him like give khutbah, you know, 2-3 times a month. That was something that I picked up on quite a bit, was how he handled those different events that would happen throughout the year. You know, whether it's a humanitarian crisis or, you know, there's an earthquake or this or that, like the way that he would address those helped in, like, shape for me quite a bit how to address that if I was put in that spot.
Yeah. And it's a tough thing too, because if, I mean, you'll always get the people that if you address one issue, then why haven't you addressed the 10 other issues that are going on? So it's like, I don't know. I'd rather be on the sideline and listen to someone else versus me being the one who addresses it, because there's too many things going on.
And I think the important thing is, like, you know, some of those things, you know, the khutbah itself, like we said, it has to give people a spiritual juice for that week.
Yeah.
And you might be able to intelligently address one of these topics and talk about it in depth, but if you haven't raise the iman of the congregation, then it's a failure.
Yeah. And one thing I do, and this is part of my prep process, is that, and this even goes with how I even word things, is that I'm always thinking of the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking of the person who doesn't come to the masjid, who comes there once a week. This is their spiritual juice for the next week coming up.
Yep.
What is the best way to address them? What is the most uplifting thing to address
and
them?
By the way, I find myself being in that, like, in that, I have that feeling myself. Even on Fridays when I'm giving the khutbah, yeah. Like, you know, this was a terrible week. I struggled all week. What would I need to hear to try to,
yeah,
you know, reconnect?
To push through.
And, that, you know, this brings up another topic that we plan on talking about, was handling khutbahs around specific holidays or special occasions. You know, so the... And it becomes cliche in a sense, right? Like, the Thanksgiving Friday becomes a khutbah about gratitude, yep, and not going Black Friday shopping. You know, the Super Bowl khutbah becomes one about, like, don't waste time watching the Super Bowl, read Quran instead. Like,
yeah.
Okay, dude. Well, actually, I'm boycotting the NFL this year, so I might not actually watch it.
The Christmas ones becomes about for me it's been a comparison of Isa and Islam versus Isa or Jesus and Christianity.
Yeah.
And just I sat there one year. Again, and you have to realize that the khutbahs that are on holiday times are the most attended.
Yes. And so people don't get this, an underrated aspect is you are getting a crowd that does not attend Jummah weekly.
And as much as we make fun of that, like we make,
no, we shouldn't,
and we shouldn't. We make fun of it a lot internally. We say, they're only Thanksgiving khutbah Muslims or whatever.
Yeah, or the Eid khutbah guys.
Yeah, the Eid khutbah guys. But I mean, this is the time where you have to deliver that ultra pristine message for them.
Yeah, because the thing is, we blame the people, but when you have that opportunity, like, did you actually? And this is the added responsibility and amount of the khatib, is you had an opportunity to reach that person. Did you fulfill that? Like, did you do it with ihsan and, like, do it properly?
Yeah.
And when I, you know, when I attend a khutbah in the summertime when kids are off school, or I attend a khutbah, you know, like, on winter break or spring break, and it's terrible, like, it kills me. Because it's not, like, one bad khutbah out of 52. You ruin, like, 25% of the Islamic stuff this person might hear in the course of a year.
Yeah, I remember one year I think it was a couple of years ago. It was Christmas time. I think Jummah was on Christmas Day. So you're talking about like being attended. That was, yeah, like the most attended khutbah, like, ever.
Everything's closed.
Yeah, everything's closed.
Everyone's home.
No one's at work. You know, everyone's at home, and I just remember Mosia was packed.
Yeah.
And all it was a khutbah on comparative Islam. Or a comparative religion khutbah. There was no message that was afterwards that, okay, do this for the next week, or there was no take-home message. It was literally something that could
There's nothing even that makes someone feel better about being Muslim.
Yeah. Like, it was literally something that could have been covered, like, in a halakha, or a daras at the masjid.
Or a
blog post. It was not khutbah material. But because it was a stereotype, right? It was it's Christmas time, I must address this from the...
Yeah.
From the Muslim perspective. And
that's literally like the Mother's Day khutbah being, every day is Mother's Day, respect your parents. Like, okay, like, we got it. We must spend a lot of time coming up with that one.
Yeah, so it's just from that perspective, I mean, from a khatib, yeah, you want to talk about those things, but don't get pigeonholed in the sense where you have to, like, talk about it, and don't let that topic, if you ever get to the point, don't let that topic overshadow what you really want to talk about and what the take-home message should be for the community.
So let's talk about this a little bit deeper. You know, there's a skill, there's a purpose to giving khutbah. There's a number of things. I'm interested to see how you approach, like, your own process in terms of how you get better, right? So there's the whole... you know, we give the example of, in Khatib Workshop, I always give the American Idol example, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the American Idol example essentially is when you watch, like, the first 2 weeks of the show, they'll do this showcase where they highlight this guy or this girl or whatever, and they're like, you know, it's my passion. This is what I was born to do. I love doing it. And I'm from, like, this one stoplight town in Podunk, Montana. And
thank you for saying Montana, not Alabama, by the way.
I I'm sort of making fun of myself there, but that's a different story. Mississippi. Anyhow. But you know, they interview all their friends and their family. Yeah, they sing at all the birthday parties and all the bar mitzvahs and the this and the that. And, you know, they're the best singer and this is what they were born to do. And, you know, like, this person has tied their identity to it. And then they go on the audition and the doctors are like, you know, if you want to help humanity, don't ever open your mouth again. Like, wow. No one should ever hear your voice because it hurts your, you know, it hurts people's ears. Like, they'll just be very, you know, caustic with them. And the funny thing is, like, you're getting, you know, as it's dramatized for television, obviously, but you're getting an expert opinion, right? You're getting an opinion from someone who is successful in that field. They know what it takes to make it. And they're telling you that you don't have talent. And instead of recognizing that, what the person does is they actually double down. And they're like, no, you don't understand how good I am. Like, this is what I'm, you know, I'm born to do. And and then they go out and, like, they're crying and they're devastated. And their friends are all saying, like, oh, those judges are stupid. They don't understand how awesome you are. Like, they just can't handle how good you are. Yeah. You know, all this, like, stupid, like, building up your ego. But then that person leaves, like, I'm going to prove them wrong. I'm like, I don't think so. I think they're going to be proven right in what they said. But I think this is an issue that we have with khutbahs that it kind of goes under the radar because people don't talk about it. But we have, we have a couple of situations. We have the American Idol syndrome where you have the khatib that's been giving khutbah regularly for like 20 years and they suck. I mean, they suck. And listening to them is painful. Like, I will sit there and I will cringe because it's so horrible. And I'm not trying to be down, but I mean, if you suck, you suck.
Yeah.
Like, I might be super passionate about basketball and I love playing basketball and I love all things about basketball, but bottom line is I'm not good enough to play. Like, no, there's no teams lining up to draft me, right? Yeah. Like, I suck. So it is what it is. I find something else to do, right? But the problem is that every week they give khutbah. And, you know, there's 20 people lined up afterwards saying, oh, that was awesome, that was awesome, that was awesome.
Yeah.
So my question for you is, and I'll maybe share my thoughts as well, is how do you handle compliments? How do you handle criticisms? And how do you approach this almost as like a craft that you're trying to get better at?
Yeah, so compliments, I hate them. To be honest, because you'll have the typical person.
They compliment everything.
They'll compliment everything.
You could get up and, like, you could misquote. You could quote something as an ayah of the Quran that's actually a hadith, and someone would come up to you and be like, "Oh, I love that ayah of Quran. It changed my life." Like, no, it wasn't even an ayah of the Quran, but thanks anyway.
Yeah, you know. So that stuff. I hate hearing it because I think this happened last Friday or. Yesterday, actually, this past Friday, I thought I bombed the khutbah. It was a rehash from a few years ago at the same location, by the way. I'm just hoping that no one remembered.
They didn't. They don't remember what happened last week.
Yeah, they don't. I didn't remember the khutbah, by the way, but. But, you know, people came up to me afterwards, oh, yeah, her, you know, great clip. I just don't want to hear that because I personally knew it wasn't great. But so criticisms, I kind of take criticisms in two different ways. The first one is that you're going to get the person who's going to criticize everything.
Yep.
It doesn't matter, like, if you said if you prepared and you did X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
They're going to criticize you just for the sake of criticism.
Yep.
You have to kind of look at that and just push that away. But then there's people who are going to give you criticism in the sense where they will say, oh, you should have thought about this, or they'll add more to the khutbah. I remember one point, one brother came up to me after a khutbah, and I was giving the story on, or the hadith about the Prophet being the one who smiled the most in Medina. He used to be, yeah. One sahaba said that I've never seen anyone smile more than the Prophet. So I kind of just left that point at that, just to show how his attitude was. And his brother came up to me afterwards and he said, you know, that was a really good point. He said, but you also have to realize that the Prophet's only one who he buried every single one of his children except for one. He was someone who was constantly dealing with the people of Mecca, you know, other people in Medina. So he had all these stresses around in daily life.
And you still managed.
But he still managed to smile. And that, to this day, I still remember that.
Yeah.
I still remember that, and I have that in my notes. I went afterwards, and I said, okay, I got to add this little point.
Yep.
And that, to me, that constructive criticism.
Yeah.
Kind of enhanced my delivery later on, because the person was like, you know, I love the point, but I want to think about it from this perspective as well.
This is funny, because there's, you know, there's a hadith that Prophet said, convey from me, even if it's one ayah, right? Like one statement, because the one listening to it may understand it better than the one conveying it. Mm. And that's something that I always try to keep in mind, is that, you know, like, I have to do my part. I have to prepare properly. I have to do my research. But, you know, because sometimes I'll be giving khutbah, and I know that there's more qualified people sitting in the audience, right? Like, you just look up and it's like, why is this person sitting there?
Oh, my God, I guess.
You know? Oh. And that happens to me all the time. It happened to me the other week, right? Like, I look up and there's, like, a proper scholar, khatib guy, and I'm like, why are you here? I'm like, if I had seen you before, but
I get so mad at that situation. I'm like, why aren't you up here giving?
But you know, this is where also it's like, you have to remember that it's ibadah's responsibility. And then also it is that point that you might say something, the one listening understands it better than you do.
Mm.
And, you know, that's where, you know, like you said, that type of criticism and input, that helps significantly. Like, I remember I gave a khutbah one time on friendship in social media age. And it was a holiday khutbah. Because it was targeted toward a younger crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of told myself, I'm like, I know this is toward the younger crowd, but I don't care. Because those uncles are here every... I guess the masjid I give khutbah at like once a month, right? Yeah. I'm like, I know these uncles are here every month. If I lose them on one, it's okay. It's not a big deal. It's a calculated risk, so to speak, right? And afterward, one of those uncles came up to me and he said, oh, I really loved it. And I was like, oh, really? Like, what in particular? By the way, this is my strategy. If someone comes and gives me like a generic compliment, I'll say, you know, first of all, we should tell people, like, never do the stupid fake humility thing where you're like, oh, no, it was terrible. Yeah. Like, nobody believes you.
Yeah.
Like, just shut up. Like, it's fake. If someone gives you a compliment, like, be appreciative, you know, validate their, you know, they felt that it was good, validate that feeling. Like, Jazakallah khair, I appreciate, you know, you sharing that. But I always followed up with, and I think this is something I got from Sheikh Yasser, actually, was what in particular resonated with you. Mm. And if they give me a funny look, like, why are you asking me that? I'll even tell them, like, it helps me to understand for next time I have to deliver khutbah that, you know, what connects with people. And so the uncle said that, he goes, you know, everything that you talked about, he goes, look, I don't understand any of this stuff. He goes, this is way after my time. He goes, my kids all use it. And he goes, and I know that there's problems with it, but I've never known how to open the conversation with them.
Wow.
And when you mentioned XYZ, he goes, I realized that that was something that I could use to initiate the conversation with my kids. I was like, can you hold on a second? Like, I need to write this down. Because it's not something that I had thought of. He understood something from it much better than I had intended to convey.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I took that and stole it.
Wow.
And reincorporated for the next time that I've got to do that.
Well, one thing that happened to me yesterday, I just thought of this, was... and this is the khutbah that I didn't want to give. I wasn't feeling it. I rehashed something from a few years ago. And literally, like, I remember, and this is so bad from a khatib perspective, it was 2 hours before Jummah.
Yeah.
And I'm going through, like, four different, like, khutbahs that I could give.
Oh, no.
And I'm trying to, like, just, okay, which one am I going to give? And so I finally chose one, and I was refining it at work and everything. And after the khutbah, again, I thought I bombed it. I was like, man, this is a terrible khutbah. You know, I don't think anyone really got anything from it. And the khutbah was about, like, dealing with stresses and worries in life and everything like that. And I, you know, gave some ayahs, hadiths, whatever. And so one brother came in for me afterwards, and he was like, look, he was like, and this brother obviously had just come there, and he was like, I really loved your khutbah because you mentioned that every single phase in life we were going through hardships. And he said, like, you know, yesterday I just got in a car accident, like, all this stuff happened.
Yeah.
And I was feeling depressed and down and everything. And you saying that everyone's going through something kind of lifted me up, saying, okay, I can get through it. It's not unique to me.
Yeah.
And that to me was like, I was like, man, it wasn't me. From a khadi perspective, I mean, never underestimate what advice you're going to give on the member as well.
And this goes back to the whole, and this is the nobody cares part of the episode, is, the more people make the khutbah about themselves, the less effective it is.
Ooh, that's good.
You know, like, you have, if you're not concerned with what the audience is hearing and getting, it's going to fail. Mm-hmm. And you see that. Like, I've seen people who are, you know, they give the khutbah just to promote their Friday night program or the khutbah to promote their fundraising effort or even, I mean, I hate saying, but it, you know, just being real, like people that give clip to promote themselves.
Yeah.
Not explicitly, but like
you can tell.
You can tell, right? And it that it just comes across. Like people pick up when the vibe is not right. You know.
I would also say, like, the vibe not right, like, don't be that guy where the chutzpah is, like, this most formal...
No, it's...
Like, don't say nay, like, don't be the most formal person
that
you can
verily
be. Oh, my God, that just...
My...
Like, just be
brothers
real.
And sisters in this blessed religion of Islam, I advise myself before I advise all of you that... I was like, man... You've never spoken like that before in your life.
Yeah. Or the classic, there's the congregation of brothers and sisters, and you just mentioned the brothers.
The brothers, yeah. And elders.
The brothers and elders.
But, no, like, you have to, you know, and that best part of it is the khutbah is, you know, someone told me, like, it's ibadah, it's not performance art.
Mm.
It's not meant, and, you know, this is where, like, YouTube has ruined the khutbah, right? Like, yeah. Every speech has to be YouTube quality. It's like, no. The khutbah is meant to plant... very small seeds. You know, none of us, if I asked you what khutbah you heard 6 weeks ago, you could probably sit down for like 20 minutes thinking about it and you probably wouldn't be able
yeah.
to. You know, you have to like look at your calendar, figure out where you prayed, and you'd be like, oh, I gave khutbah. And then you still have to like look at your notes to figure out what khutbah you even gave.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
Nobody really remembers, and that's part of the challenge. Like, no one cares what you have to say.
Yeah.
I always tell people that my litmus test is the only one person in the audience who cares is my mom, right? Mm-hmm. Even my wife doesn't care. My kids don't care.
my wife hates it when I give khutbah.
Yeah, same
and
here.
She intentionally does not attend.
Yeah, same here. My kids have even gotten tired of it because last time I took them to khutbah with me, they're like, we've already heard that one. Why did you repeat that? I'm like, because I was at a different location. They're like, it was boring. And I was like, okay.
Is that punishment for what they did throughout the week?
But... maybe I should like you have to listen to my khutbah recordings.
No,
but what was I saying? But if there's one person who actually cares, it would be my mom, right? And even my mom, like I can imagine, she'll listen to everything that I have to say. She'll you know pay attention to it. But on Friday night, if my dad asks her what was the khutbah about, she's not going to spend more than two sentences explaining it.
Yep.
If that, and that's from someone who. You know, I am like the special son, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to listen to everything he has to say. And still, you're not going to get more than a two-sentence recollection out of it. So there's an understanding, like, what you say is going to be forgotten immediately.
Yeah.
The only impact that you make is, did you give people something that they could do or internalize that helps them at least until the next week? And then you hope that over the course of a year or 2 years, it compounds.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, doing that part. But... the home run idea, like, this khutbah has to change the world, and...
It's not.
This khutbah, you know, I'm going to put this khutbah on YouTube, and it's like, no, like, stop.
Yeah.
Not everything needs to be recorded.
You mentioned something in there. We don't have it in our notes, but I want to talk about it. But you mentioned no one is going to remember the khutbah, you know, half an hour after the khutbah is done. And this kind of speaks, and this is a pet peeve of mine, the person who goes over time in khutbah.
Oh, yeah, because they have something really important to say.
So, like, they're...
Hey, guess what? Nobody cares.
So yeah, nobody cares. So number one, you came 10 minutes late for Jummah.
Yeah.
The khatib did. You
be
you
careful, khatib. Board member guy. You might be talking about somebody.
So khatib, you came 10 minutes late for Jummah, and you delayed everyone. And then number one, and now number two... Not only did you come late for Jummah, you now want to extend your khutbah 20 minutes because you came late.
Yeah.
Nobody cares, and no one's going to remember the if you want to extend Jummah by the time that everyone should be done.
They will forget everything will you forget. Said, but they will remember that you delayed prayer by 10 minutes.
Yep. And I'll tell you this from my perspective, from people that I talk to after Jummah. I know a few friends.
Yeah.
Because they have a very tight lunch schedule.
Yep.
They could hear the most amazing khutbah in the world.
But if it doesn't end on time, it's going to ruin their life.
Their frustration after Jummah is about how the khutbah didn't end on time versus the inspiration that they got. That's a PSA for all the khatibs.
And this is on time. And this is that same principle, right? Are you audience focused or are you egocentric? Are you selfishly focused?
Yep.
Is it what is of benefit to the audience versus what do I want to say?
Yeah.
and what I want to say doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I remember one thing that happened to me, and this happened a number of years ago. It was one of my first chutzpahs at the hospital where I work at. And the hospital hospital chutzpah, it's a different dynamic. It's doctors that are taking time off their shift to come for Jummah. It's literally a 10-minute like chutzpah, like Jummah.
10-minute Jummah. 10-minute
like
Jummah. Jummah.
Like your chutzpah and prayer.
Adhan to Taslim is less than 10 minutes.
Yes. And so I remember we were waiting on the shuttle, and the shuttle came late or whatever. And I got to chutzpah like 5 minutes like before the time should have ended. I literally went up there, said salam, said like one or two things I was gonna say out of like 2 pages of what I was gonna give.
Yeah.
And we stopped at that point and we prayed. Because the most important aspect of that time, yeah, was respecting people's time.
Yeah.
Versus, okay, let me finish the 50 minutes of what I had to say.
And you know, we should clarify one thing, right? So we talked about taking advantage of the holiday khutbahs and things like that because you're reaching people that don't ever come.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, staying short, respecting the audience, not respecting their desires, because you have to give them what they need.
Yep.
You have to give the reminder, even if it's tough. But the hardest place to strike that balance is Eid prayer.
Mm.
Because at Eid, what happens is the khatib tends to say like, oh, look, I got 300 people here that don't ever hear anything. I'm gonna let loose. Let me teach them about Islam. Let me drop some knowledge on them. And so they end up speaking for 30, 40.
I've sat through a 1 hour Eid khutbah before.
And it didn't even make sense. Like, they're just terrible. Like, that you're rambling at that point. You don't have an actual message that the audience is gonna take.
Yep.
And I remember this past Eid, I'm preparing. And I understand, right? No one is there to benefit from the Eid khutbah.
Mm-hmm.
People come to Friday khutbah with the intent of getting some benefit, yep, and reminder. At Eid, everyone's got what they want to do. And so I knew beforehand that the way to be successful at Eid, and this is also advice that I've gotten, have a simple, positive message, mm-hmm, that everyone can connect with, and then keep it short.
Yep.
Right? And so I remember from the time that I called everyone to start lining up for the Eid prayer until the time that the khutbah was over was like 19 or 20 minutes on the dot.
That's incredible.
It did not go over like 20 minutes. And overwhelmingly, the feedback that I got, everyone was like, we loved it.
Yeah.
Because it was short. But here's the funny thing, right? Like, we don't want to pander to people and like, oh, I'm going to give a 3-minute khutbah, yeah, just to make you happy. Like, no, but the thing was that because it was short, people paid attention.
Yeah.
And so I actually got a number of comments about the topic itself.
And this is part of the whole, it's a long-term thing. It's a long-term thing. You're trying to inspire people over
You're giving them something small.
Yeah.
And, you know, and look, and it was Eid al-Adha. And I was cliche. I talked about sacrifice.
Yeah.
I told the story of Ibrahim alayhi salam. I had my little, you know, my perspective or my angle, so to speak, that maybe was a little bit, I don't want to say different, like in an innovative sense, quote unquote, but just different from what people typically hear at that time,
yeah,
right? And so a number of people came to like, you know, weirdly, oh, we like that. That really made sense the way that you said that or whatever. But the thing was is that because it was within the parameters, people paid attention,
mm-hmm,
and they were able to take something from whatever the message, however small, that's, yeah, fine. I know a number of my friends went to another masjid that same Eid, and the khatib went for over 45 minutes. Like, it was at the point where a board member had to go and like tap him on the shoulder and actually tell him to stop.
Wow.
And the thing was is afterward, everyone that I spoke to that went there, no one knew what he talked about. I mean, part of the problem was that he was a terrible khatib.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's part of the problem. Again, it's that skill, yeah, set. Like, yep, if you don't know how to communicate a message over the course of a speech, you should not be speaking.
Yeah.
And he didn't. He just rambled on about 65 different topics.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kept... Like, it's almost like whatever popped into his head, he said it out loud. But no one knew what he talked about. No one understood what the point was when it was done. And everyone was just mad.
Yeah.
You know.
And from a khutbah perspective, if you have a khutbah on the day of Eid as well, if it's on a Friday, I actually texted Sheikh Nasser about this. I had a khutbah in Birmingham like a few years ago. It was on Friday, the day of Eid, and I asked Sheikh Nasser, I was like, what do I do in this situation? He's like, look, keep it short and sweet,
yeah,
be positive, just same thing as the Eid khutbah, just be positive about the Jummah khutbah, and don't go like 10, 15 minutes. That's it. Because people
it's
are
a
there.
Day of celebration.
It's a day of celebration. People are there
we
because
have
of the
all year to beat everybody up.
Yep. And it was just that. I mean, it was literally like a 10, 15 minute khutbah on just a positive message, and everyone appreciated that.
It's time and place. Yep. Like, there's, you know, I don't know why people like to beat up on the positive message, but, you know, the reality is, like, we all, and it's a different thing, but everyone goes through enough negativity all week. Like, Jumma should improve someone's life, or it should force a level of introspection such that someone is motivated to change. Not shaming them.
Yeah. It's a reminder.
It's a reminder, right? Like, make people reflect.
Yeah. So last thing I want to ask, and just open thing over here. What is the worst khutbah that you've sat through?
Oh, there's too
Topic
many.
Wise.
There's too many.
Give a couple.
I sat through one about the Supreme Court ruling on homosexuality, where the khatib basically was trying to argue the point that somehow because it's legal, people will suddenly become homosexual.
Okay.
I've heard in that was Ramadan khutbah.
Oh,
I've heard an Eid khutbah where the khatib told women to obey their husbands. I've sat through a number of nonsensical khutbahs where I didn't know what they were talking about. That's probably like the most painful.
Really?
Like, we're just sitting there and I'm like, what's going on?
And there's no connection. There's no point.
There's nothing.
There's just nothing.
Rambling. I hate the fundraiser khutbah. I really hate the, you know, because it starts out good because they've obviously practiced it, but then it ends with the, and this is why. But I'll tell you, you know what, the maybe one of the worst, this one might take the cake. It was the last Friday of Ramadan, and
one that's a lot that's well attended too.
Obviously, yes. Right? Last Friday of Ramadan. We were intending to go to one masjid because there was a good khatib, and we were running late. And so we realized that we were probably barely going to make the iqamah if we went there, so we stopped at another masjid that we didn't want to go to, for good reason. So we get there, and it's the last Friday of Ramadan, so like everyone spent an entire month just going all out, doing everything they can.
Yeah.
And the khatib is yelling, shouting.
Oh, no.
Saying basically how your deeds don't count, and you know the Sahaba used to consider themselves hypocrites, and they didn't think that their deeds counted, and it doesn't matter what you did if Allah doesn't accept it, and you know it was a little bit beyond the normal sincerity thing. Like it was less about reflect on your sincerity, and more about like, oh, you think you prayed all month? Well, guess what? It didn't count. Like that was the attitude, and at the end of it. Basically, like, the whole lead-up was, if you want everything that you did this month to count, donate to our construction project.
Oh, my God.
I heard one where the guy, you know, I walked in and the guy was just shouting about hellfire, the punishments of the hellfire, and how so many people are going to go to hellfire. And it was like a Southern Baptist brimstone and fire. Like, the dude, I mean, his arms were shaking.
Yeah.
He was yelling into the mic, and I was like, I could feel my heart rate go up. I was like, man, like this, you know, he's just going and going and going. And I was like, God, like, I was just thinking in my head, I'm like, you know, I was like looking at the door, like, I wonder if anyone lost their iman and walked out yet.
Wow.
Like, it was just brutal. It was brutal. Then he sits down for the break. He gets up for the second khutbah and he's like collected himself. And he goes, there are 8 gates to Jannah. And I was like, all right. I'm like, I exhaled. I'm like, okay. I'm like, fine, this was crazy. He's going to end on this little positive note, whatever, call it a day. Everyone goes home. He goes, there's a gate for fasting. There's a gate for salah. But do you know what there's not a gate for? There's not a gate for music, because music is a gate to Jahannam. And there's not a gate for movies, because movies are a gate to Jahannam. And then he just started all over again. And I was like, man. I couldn't take it.
Did you feel like walking out?
I did. I really, really did. I heard one khatib recite The Little Engine That Could. And I had a friend of mine walk out. He was traveling, though.
Oh,
so it was
God.
Okay, technically, from a fiqh perspective.
Oh,
he didn't
God.
Pray Jumma, but he walked out. He was like, I was either going to start laughing or I was going to yell at him. But either way, I needed to leave.
the little engine that could. Oh man, I've sat through a halal meat khutbah.
Yeah, I've like, sat through a madhab khutbah.
Madhab khutbah. I've sat through a Shias are terrible and blaming them for everything.
Fantastic. Khutbah,
where the masjid had to have a statement the next Jummah afterwards. Like,
it's bad when the masjid has to release a statement about your khutbah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. Too many bad khutbahs.
But anyhow, that's yeah. that. That's our discussion.
Yeah.
So if you enjoyed this episode, you can tweet at us at Adam Tofiq, at Ibn Abi Omar. We don't have a Facebook page, email list, all that stuff.
Because why? Nobody cares.
No one cares about it. And we just don't really care about marketing it. So if you like it, you can let people know, tweet at us and let us know that you heard it. If you have any thoughts about this discussion, anything else you'd like to hear us talk about,
push through.
And we'll record sometime again.
Yeah.
Not sure when.
Not sure when.
Or the topic, but we'll see.
Inshallah.
All right.
All right. Assalamu alaikum, everyone.
No closing. We'll try to splice in an office clip.
Yeah.
We'll splice in something.
Yeah. We'll do an office clip.
All right.
All right. Assalamu alaikum, everyone.
Assalamu alaikum.
Why are you the way that you are? Honestly, every time I try to do something fun or exciting, you make it not that way. I hate so much about the things that you choose to be.